Well, at long last, after 8 months and 34 sermons, I plan to conclude this series on money and wealth. I've been started last Sunday going through Ramsey's seven baby steps, and those baby steps are, number one, to save $1,000 as quickly as possible. Then do the debt snowball, where you list off your debts smallest to largest and attack the smallest one with a vengeance and pay minimum payments on the rest. And then you just keep knocking them out in that order. Number three, once you get that done, then all that money then goes into an emergency fund until it has 3 to 6 months of living expenses saved up. There is what Ramsey calls step 3B, and that is saving up a down payment for a house if you don't already have one. So once the emergency fund is full, then all that money just goes to the down payment on the house. And then step four is to invest 15% of your gross income into retirement accounts. That's gross income before taxes. Step five, which we'll look at today, six and seven, we'll look at all three of these today. Step five is to save for your children's college. That one's optional in my opinion, and I'll talk about that. Step number six is to pay off your house early. And then step number seven is to build wealth and to give like no other. If your purpose is just to get wealthy and enjoy all of your money for yourself, like Ramsey says, you're like a monkey with your hand in a bottle, with your fist in a bottle, and you've missed the whole point. Build wealth and give like no other. If that's your goal, you might actually hit it. All right, baby step number five, save for college. Ramsey recommends beginning this when your children are born. So as soon as your child's born, then you set up a tax-deferred college fund and start putting money in that and figure out how much money you need to put in there every month for the next 18 years with inflation and all that, if you want to do that to help your kids out with college. Personally, I don't recommend doing this unless you have a boy who you have good reason to believe will need to go or want to go to college for science, technology, engineering, medicine, as they call it, STEM, or other related fields that actually require a college degree and will pay well. Now, of course, when your son is born, you're not going to have any idea what he might be interested in. So maybe if he starts reading by the age of three and doing math in his head by age five, you say, eh, we'll probably start saving for college. Who was it, Jeff Foxworthy said, everybody thinks their kid's so smart. Yeah, my baby's so smart. He lies on the floor and talks to the ceiling fan. He said, Uncle Harold does that, and you all call him an alcoholic. Anyway. Not all kids are cut out for college, and even the ones that are cut out for college, it's probably a waste of time for most of them anyway, honestly, especially these days. That's just my view anyway. But I think it is a fact, I think any Christian would agree with me, maybe, that college is one of the worst places and the most dangerous places you could send your children. So you want to really, really beware if you send them there, because you're sending them into a den of vipers. You're sending them into a cesspool of moral filth and horrible ideological concepts, wokeism and all the other stuff, feminism, whatever that I've talked about many times. You're sending them into a very dangerous place. So if they go there, you better make sure that you've spent the previous 18 years really grounding them in the truth of the Bible, because there have been many children that go off to college as believers and come out of it as unbelievers. That happens all the time. So be very, very careful if you send your children to those places. Now, if you send your kids to college, getting back to the financial aspect, tell them not to take out student loans under any circumstances. And this isn't just my idea. These are Ramsey's baby steps. So here's what Ramsey had to say about it. This is in his Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money, page 246. He says all the savings options we've covered just go to support my first rule of college: pay cash. If you can't pay cash, put the kid to work for a semester and then send him back to pay cash later. Student loans may look like a quick fix, but they turn into a nightmare and send college graduates out into the world with a boat anchor of debt around their necks. On the next page, he says, all debt is horrible. I totally agree. So you can't go ahead and get rid of any notion of college loans being, quote, good debt, unquote. There's no such thing. The only good debt is no debt. Kind of like the only good snake is a dead snake, right? The only good debt is no debt. There's no such thing as good debt, period, ever, end of story. The only good debt is no debt, as he said. The unending stream of payments from student loans doesn't look or feel any different than an unending stream of payments for a car loan or a credit card. There's no good about it. There's nothing good about it. There's nothing good about that, pardon me, emotionally or financially. And then he continues there on that same page. Bottom line, student loans look easy at the front end, but they will absolutely destroy your graduate as he or she enters the workforce. Students on average graduate from a four-year college with over $20,000 of student loans. This is written like 15 years ago, so it's a lot higher than that today. If you include all students, graduate and undergraduate, that number tops 42,000. Can you imagine what it feels like to step out of college and on the first day of your adult life have over $40,000 of debt on your shoulders? That's no way to start a career. And the student loan bills start coming whether you have a job or not. Don't put that kind of stress on your kids. Avoid student loans like the plague. Not only does the average kid come out of college now, I don't know what it is, I'm sure it's at least $40,000 in debt, but he also just bought a new car and he's got another $40,000 in debt on that. And then he's also got his credit cards racked up from all the partying he did when he was in school and all the clothes and stupid crap that he bought that he didn't need. And on and on and on and on it goes. And he is piled under a mountain of debt and he will never, ever get out of it. He will be a debt slave for the rest of his life. That is what most kids enter into life at 22 years old in this country as. And you don't want that to happen to your kids. At least I certainly hope you don't. Now, some people think, but it's impossible, right? You can't. You got to have student loans to go to college. Just like you got to have a car loan to have a car. No, it's not impossible. It's not impossible at all. The kids can work summer jobs. They can work part-time jobs while they're in college. They can get scholarships to pay for it. And then go to cheap state schools to keep the cost lower. You don't need to go to private schools. You don't need to go to prestigious schools. Nobody cares what college you went to. I'm serious. Nobody cares. You go to an interview. On your first interview for your first job, they might care what college you went to, and probably they don't even care about that. They probably don't even care about your GPA. They're going to talk to you. They want to see, can he actually communicate with me? Does he seem like a half-decent person? Does he have a decent work ethic? They're going to be more concerned about that, and then see, what can you actually do? Show me what your skills are. What do you know? Like, they're not going to care what your degree is. And after your first job, forget about it. Your degree is absolutely meaningless after your first job. It is absolutely meaningless. I promise you that, after your first job. Nobody cares. So forget about the idea of sending your kids to expensive colleges and universities. It's a total waste of time. Now, can you pay for college? Can you go to college without debt? Yes, you can. How do I know? Because I did it. Okay? Because I did it. I had summer jobs. I had part-time jobs while I was in college. I got scholarships, which I spent a lot of time filling out applications for and doing all kinds of stuff. I did one. I might have told you this. I forget. But I thought it was just some localized thing, and I spent a ton of time thinking the whole time, I am wasting so much time for probably like $500. It was a $5,000 scholarship that I got. It was worth the time. And then, of course, I joined the Army Reserve, and that was a biggie, right? Because they paid, I forget how many tens of thousands of dollars they paid. And thanks to my mother. My mother filled out all the paperwork for me. My parents didn't help me. They didn't give me a dime to go to college. But my mother did all that paperwork, which was absolutely huge. So, you can do it. I don't recommend going to the Army Reserve these days. I don't recommend going to the military at all. It's a woke cesspool. I think it's a very bad idea for anybody to go these days, but if you can suffer through it, I guess, and if you don't mind coming back with missing limbs and a screwed up head, then maybe it's worth it to you. I don't know. But anyway, there are other ways to do it as well without debt. Ramsey said on page 243 of the book we just quoted there, he said, college is just like anything else we spend money on. You don't deserve it unless you can pay for it. Everybody deserves a college education. No, Nobody deserves a college education unless they can write out a check for it. Other than that, you don't deserve a college education. And you don't deserve to go to the doctor, and you don't deserve to stop working, and you don't deserve to eat, and you don't deserve anything unless you can write out a check for it. That's the way that life works. You don't deserve it unless you can pay for it. So don't allow your children to ruin their lives by being chained down with student loan debt for oftentimes worthless degrees that do not pay and many times are not necessary for the career that they will end up in. How many kids, the majority, 75% probably, have college degrees, are not working in the field that they went to school for, and their college degree was totally unnecessary. And all they got from it was a bunch of moral filth and depravity and bad memories from all the horrible things that they did for those 4 years, which they now regret. Okay, enough on that one. Baby step number six. This is a fun one. Pay off your home mortgage early. Remember what it says in Romans 13 and verse 8? Owe no man anything but to love one another. Owe no man anything. So if you have a home mortgage, take that verse to heart and say, you know what? I don't want to owe any man anything for any longer than I absolutely have to. I want to pay this thing off as fast as I possibly can. Proverbs 22:7. The borrower is servant to the lender. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. I don't want to be a slave any longer than I have to, you should say to yourself. I'm going to pay this thing off as quickly as possible. So once you have all your other debts paid off, you have a 3 to 6 month 3 to 6 months month of expenses saved in an emergency fund, you're putting away 15% of your gross income into retirement savings. Now it's time to focus on paying off your house early with as much earnestness as you can. If you have a 30-year mortgage, refinance it to a 15-year fixed-rate mortgage. That'll get it paid off in half the amount of time. You get the math, right? 30 divided by 2 is right. 15, right? Half the time. You'll spend half as much time paying it off, right? I know this is some deep stuff, but this will save you a huge amount of money. Now, you might think, oh, it's not going to save me that much money. I'm just spending twice as much over 15 years to pay it off twice as fast. So, you know, whether I pay it off in 30 years or pay it off in 15, I'm either just spending twice as much now or I'm just spending half as much for 30 years. That's not how compound interest works. That's not how it works at all. You will save yourself loads of money. Thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars by taking out a 15-year mortgage instead of a 30-year mortgage. I've already given you all the figures earlier in this study. You can see them on page 89. And it doesn't cost you that much more to do it. For like an extra $500 a month on your mortgage payment, you can save yourself hundreds of thousands of dollars over the next 30 years. And it'll deliver you from debt slavery 15 years earlier. I don't know about you, but that sounds like a good deal to me. Here's what Ramsey said, The Total Money Makeover, page 191. He said, 30-year mortgages are for people who enjoy slavery so much that they want to extend it for 15 more years and pay thousands of dollars more for the privilege. If you must take out a mortgage, pretend only 15-year mortgages exist. He goes on to say, when asked about mortgages, I tell everyone never to take more than a 15-year fixed-rate loan and never have a payment of over 25% of your take-home pay. This is the most you should ever borrow. He continues, this is from his other book, Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money. He says, only get a 15-year fixed-rate conventional mortgage with at least 10% down and a payment that is no more than 25% of your take-home pay, at least 10% down. But then he goes on to say what I think, and that's 10% is really not enough. He says there on the same page, if you can't put at least 10% down, that's a sure sign that you aren't ready to buy a house. I'd prefer you put 20% down. This is Ramsey speaking. 20% or more down, though. That gives you a more solid position, and it keeps you out of the PMI territory. So you're not paying mortgage insurance if you have 20% down. So you're throwing yet more money away if you don't have the 20% down payment. Then he continues, he says, if more than a fourth of your take-home pay is eaten up by your house payment, you'll essentially be what is known as house poor. That just means you have too much of your monthly cash flow tied up in mortgage payments. Even though you should be debt-free with a full emergency fund before you buy, a house payment of 35 to 50% of your pay, which a lot of people have, that's my parenthesis there, a house payment with 35 to 50% of your pay can put a serious strain on your family and prevent you from hitting baby steps 4 through 6, like we've talked about. So you may look at your budget and think, oh, no, I can afford more than that, right? I can afford more than 25%. I can afford 40%. I'll be fine. You probably haven't factored everything in yet. You haven't factored in when the HVAC blows up and the water heater goes out and the motor blows up in your car and whatever else, you know, and your kid breaks his leg and has to go to the emergency room for $3,000. You haven't factored all that stuff in. When you start factoring it all in, you realize the 25% of your take-home pay figure is there for a reason. And you have padding in your life. And not to mention, it also just gives you peace of mind, right? Because when you have extra in your budget and you're not right down to the last penny at the end of every month, it just feels better, right? You have less stress in your life. And guess what? Less stress in your life means better health, better mental health, better physical health. So it's just good to keep that down to that 25% of your take-home pay level there. It's better financially and physically and emotionally. Now, you don't want to fall for the trap of taking out a 30-year mortgage and promising yourself that you're going to pay it off in 15 years, right? People do this. I'll take out a 30-year, but I'll just pay it off in 15. I'll pay it just like I'm doing 15. Right? And I know I'm good for it. I can do it. I know this. I'm disciplined. I'm structured. I can do it. Right? It reminds me, you ever see Dumb and Dumber? You ever see the movie Dumb and Dumber? And they got the briefcase full of $1 million. It's like one of my favorite movies. So forgive me. I know your opinion of me just went way down, but, they get the briefcase full of $1 million. And when they finally realize that there was $1 million in there, they're like, we're just going to spend a little bit of it, you know, and we're going to be meticulous and we're going to keep receipts of everything. We're going to pay every penny of it back. You know, we just need a little bit right now. And they go out and buy a Lamborghini and tuxedos. I mean, all this stuff. And they're handing out hundreds of dollars in tips and all this stuff. Well, at the end of the movie, when the guy comes back to get his money and he opens up the briefcase, he's like, what is this? It's just a bunch of paper. It's a bunch of IOUs. And he's like, no, sir. Those things are just as good as money. You see this one? 250,000. Hold on to that one. That's important, you know. Yeah, we're going to pay it back. Definitely. It's going to be paid back. We're going to pay off this 30-year mortgage in 15 years. I promise. Good luck with that. Here's what Ramsey says. Myth. This is from his book, The Total Money Makeover. Myth. Take out a 30-year mortgage and promise yourself to pay it like a 15-year. And if something goes wrong, you'll have wiggle room. See, this sounds reasonable, right? I'll put it on a 30, but I'm going to pay on it like a 15. And then just in case something goes wrong, then, you know, I don't have to make that payment. I can get back to it next month. But, you know, it just gives me a little bit of padding. All right, sounds good, right? Truth, something will go wrong, right? You say, I'll pay it off, you know, and just if something goes wrong, you know, I'll be all right. I don't have to make that bigger payment. Well, something will go wrong, Ramsey says. One thing I am sure of in my total money makeover, I had to quit telling myself that I had innate discipline and fabulous natural self-control. That is a lie. I have to put systems and programs in place that make me do smart things, saying, cross my fingers and hope to die. I promise I will pay extra on my mortgage because I am the one human on the planet who has that kind of discipline. Is kidding yourself. A big part of being financially strong is that you know where you are weak and take actions to make sure you don't fall prey to the weakness. And we all are weak. Sick children, bad transmissions, prom dresses, high heat bills, and dog vaccinations come up and you won't make the extra payment. Then we extend the lie by saying, oh, I will next month. Grow up, Ramsey says. The FDIC says 97.3% of people don't systematically make extra or don't pay extra on their mortgage. 97.3% of people don't systematically. Yeah, once in a while they might throw a little extra on there. But 97% of the time people don't systematically pay extra on their mortgage. So don't fool yourself thinking that you will. Ramsey says in his complete guide to money, stay away. Let me get my glasses on. It's a little easier. He says, stay away from adjustable rates, balloons, ARMs, and all the other garbage options. ARMs are adjustable rate mortgages. They're the ones where you get the nice low rate for 5 years, and then it gets readjusted up to a higher rate later, and you get screwed because you get hooked on that lower payment, and then you can't make the payment in a few years. ARMs are the dumbest thing you could possibly do. They're one of the many dumbest things that you could possibly do. Balloons are probably even dumber. I don't know. I'm not sure which is dumber. Balloons are, you have a mortgage and your payment is lowered per month until you get to the end of the mortgage and you owe some great big payment at the end. You pay off the whole balance at the end. So you save a little bit for how many ever, 25 or 30 years, and then at the end you pay a big old lump sum of $10,000 or whatever. That's also the dumbest thing you could possibly do, in addition to all the other dumbest things you could possibly do with money. Don't do any of that stuff. And back to Ramsey here. And definitely stay away from a 30-year loan. Let's break down some hard numbers. If you take a 30-year loan on a $225,000 mortgage at 6%, your payment will be around $1,349 per month. The same loan on a 15-year term will have a payment of about $1,899 or $550 more. These are the numbers most people look at when they're sitting at the finance table. But remember, rich people don't ask how much per month. Instead, they ask how much. So let's see how much this deal eventually costs. In this example, if you took out a 30-year mortgage, you'd end up paying $485,000 for that $225,000 home. You paid over twice as much as it was worth. That's pretty stupid. That was my words, not his. But he would have said the same thing. But if you take the 15-year, you'd end up paying just $341,000. You're still paying a fortune more than it's worth, but you're paying a lot lower fortune than you would have with a 30-year. That was my commentary again. That means for an extra $550 a month, you'd save yourself $143,000 in 15 years of debt. And the thing about 15-year mortgages is that they always pay off in 15 years or less. You know that? 15-year mortgages always pay off in 15 years. Right? You get it? They have to. Right? Or you get your house repossessed. They always pay off in 15 years. You don't have to worry about promising yourself and pinky swearing and all this other crap. It will pay off in 15 years, period. Or the bank will take it back, one of the two. $143,000 you'll save yourself by paying it off in 15 instead of 30 years. That means that those filthy banksters get $143,000 less money from you if you take out a 15-year. And the thing about 15-year, oh, I read that part. If you get a 30-year and think you'll pay it off like a 15-year, you're fooling yourself. Something else will always be more important or more urgent, and you'll never systematically pay it off early. Now, maybe you are like the 1%. You're the one weirdo out there that could do it. But more than likely, be honest with yourself, you're probably not. Here's one more thing that I want to add in there that I didn't add in, but I just thought about this morning. If you refinance, always refinance for the length of the term you have left. Okay? So say you do have a 30-year mortgage, which you shouldn't, but say you have a 30-year mortgage and you paid on the thing for 5 years. Okay? Interest rates go down. You think, I'm going to refinance and I'm going to save myself some money. Good deal. What dum-dums do is they go back and they refinance for 30 more years. That's the stupidest thing you could ever do. I realize that's like the 10th time I've said that's the stupidest thing you could ever do. But that's one of the dumbest things you could possibly ever do. You're going to be a debt slave the rest of your life. Because you know what you do in 5 more years of interest rates drop down? You'll refinance for another 30 years and another 30 years. You ever wonder why there's a lot of people, you ever talk to people in their late 60s and 70s and they still have a mortgage? You know why that is? That's probably one of the reasons. They paid down their mortgage for 15 years and interest rates went down and then they refinanced for 30 more years. Dumb! That's the dumbest thing you could ever do. Have I got my point across? Okay. Sometimes you just got to get mad, you know? So what do? When you pay it all, you pay on it for 5 years and you got 25 years left on your mortgage, when you refinance, take out a 25-year loan. Or better yet, listen to that nagging voice in your head and say, 15-year loan. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That's what Pastor Wagner told me to do. That's what Dave Ramsey told me to do. 15-year mortgage. But at a minimum, take a 25-year mortgage, right? And then if you pay on it for a few more years and interest rates go down again, you take out a 22-year mortgage or whatever. You don't extend the mortgage term or you're going to be a debt slave for the rest of your life. All right, now, when you get that 15-year mortgage, make extra payments on it, if possible, and pay it off in less than 15 years and save yourself a lot more money in interest. You say, well, you just keep moving the goalposts. You say, get rid of the 30 and get a 15. Now you say, pay the 15 off early. You're darn right, and the next goalpost I'm going to move is I'm going to say, don't take out a loan at all and pay cash. I mean, that's the best of all, if you could do it. But no, pay that 15-year one off early. And have you ever played around with, let me see if I can say the word right, amortization. I can never say that word right. Anyway, have you ever played with those tables? You ever see what happens? If you make like one extra payment in the beginning of your mortgage and it saves you thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in 15 years or 30 years from now, right? So you get that 15-year mortgage and start making extra payments on it, whatever you can put on it, even if it's only $100 a month or whatever, it's going to save you thousands of dollars. In the long run. Because what those filthy, rotten banksters do is when they give you a loan, they don't just divide up the interest for every year of the loan, right? What they do is they take all that interest, right? That 6% on that $250,000, they take all that interest and they put it right at the beginning of the loan, and 90-some percent of your payments in the beginning are all interest. They want to get their money, right? And then when you finally get out to the end of the loan, then you actually start paying off the house. And guess what happens if you stop paying? You haven't paid anything on that house yet. You've just paid those filthy banksters all that money. So if you make a payment early, you're paying on the principal right away, and you're knocking off thousands and thousands of dollars. Here's what Ramsey said. Every dollar in your budget that you can afford above, or that you can find above living, retirement, and college should be used to make extra payments on your home. Attack that home mortgage with gazelle intensity. Now, like I said, even a better option than a 15-year mortgage is pay cash. Pay cash for your house. Now, I know this is not possible for everybody. And most people will tell you it's absolutely impossible to pay cash for a home. That's just flat out not true. That's not true. Well, yeah, if you're a millionaire. No, that's not true. You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to make some crazy amount of money. You can do it. It is possible. I promise you it's possible. I'll give you an example here from Ramsey's experience, but I can promise you it's possible. You can do it. It just requires discipline and hard work and saying no to yourself and being content and all of those hard things that nobody wants to do. But this is not true that it's impossible. It used to be much easier to do so before prices exploded in 2020. In 2020, it was very doable to pay cash for a house if you made decent money and you were disciplined and frugal and, you know, all that. It's a lot harder after 2020 when prices have doubled, but it's still possible today. If you have a decent income, if you're disciplined, patient, and you can be content with less than you desire for a time, you can still do it. It is possible. Here's what Ramsey says. This is such an encouraging story. I love it. Ramsey says, I don't borrow money ever. And I agree with that. I thought about it, maybe I'll have that inscribed on my tomb. I don't borrow money ever. Right? That's what I'd like to be remembered by. One thing, maybe. I don't borrow money ever. Luke called me from Cleveland to tell me that some of our listeners and readers are doing what Sharon and I have done. The 100% down plan. Pay cash. Most people don't think that can be done. Luke did it. Luke made really good money. His income at 23 years old was $50,000. Remember, this is, you know, 15 years ago or so. So it wouldn't be such good money now, but you know, even some $50,000, 23-year-old, that's still good money, but it was a lot better money back then. Anyway, his income at 23 years old was $50,000, and he married a young lady making $30,000. His grandfather had preached to him never to borrow money. So Luke and his new bride lived in a very small apartment over a rich lady's garage. They paid only $250 a month for it. They lived on nothing, did nothing that cost money, and they saved. Man, did they save. Making $80,000 in the household, they saved $50,000 a year for 3 years and paid cash for a $150,000 home. They closed on the home on Luke's wife's 26th birthday. They lived like no one else, and now they're living like no one else. If you make $80,000 a year and don't have any payments, you can become very wealthy very quickly. Keep in mind, though, that Luke's friends and relatives thought he should be committed. They made fun of his cars, his lifestyle, and his dream. Only his bride and his grandfather believed in his dream. Who cares what broke people think? Love that saying. That's the other one. I don't borrow money ever, and who cares what broke people think? That's what I want to put on my gravestone. You may not make $80,000 per year, but you may not need a $150,000 home as a starter either. Now, you got to translate this, right? That's a $300,000 home today, right? No kidding. No kidding. $150,000 home, when he wrote this 15 years ago, is a $300,000 home today. That's why I just right now refuse to buy a house. I'm sorry. I'm not paying $300,000 for a $150,000 house. I'm just not doing it. Not right now. I'm going to wait a while longer because I don't want to be a sucker. I don't know. Just can't do it. Anyway, so, you know, change the numbers a bit for today. Anyway, you may not make $80,000 per year, but you may not need a $150,000 home as your starter home, as your starter either. You may not make $80,000 per year, so your dream might take 5 years instead of three, like Luke's. Ask any 80-year-old if 5 years of sacrifice is worth it to change your financial destiny for the rest of your life. Ask any 80-year-old if 5 years of sacrifice is worth it to have the satisfaction of knowing you changed your family tree. Paying cash for a home is possible, very possible. What's hard to find is people willing to pay the price in sacrificed lifestyle. And that is the ticket right there. He says, ask any 80-year-old if 5 years of sacrifice is worth it. You don't have to be 80. Ask this 43-year-old if 5 years of sacrifice is worth it. 5 years, big deal. Who cares? That's nothing, right? 5 years. 5 years ago. 5 years ago is when COVID happened. You're like, what? That was 5 years ago? That seems like it was yesterday. 5 years is nothing. 5 years to sacrifice? Come on. Come on. All right, one more thing when it comes to the real estate thing, and this is rental real estate. Here's what Ramsey says about that. Mind you, this is a man who owns, I think, like $750 million in real estate or something like that. I mean, he owns hundreds of millions of dollars in real estate. Listen to what he says. For all of you people out there that think it would be a great idea to buy another house with another mortgage and rent it out and make money or something like that. Good way to lose a bunch of money. Don't mess around with real estate until you are out of debt, have a full emergency fund, have maxed out your 401k and Roth IRA options, have paid off your own house, and have some wealth built up. Only then are you ready. So he's not against owning rental real estate. Neither am I. If all those things are true, you have no debt, your own house is paid off, you got money in the bank, you know, you're saving for retirement, all that stuff. And of course, don't even think about real estate as an investment until you can pay cash for the houses. Never, 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 his words, not mine, borrow money for an investment, quote unquote. The risk is enormous. Never borrow money for an investment. That includes buying a second house and renting it out. Never, ever do that. I've seen literally thousands of so-called investors lose their shirts in real estate because they bought houses when they were broke. If you start playing the real estate game without any money, you will crash. I promise. That is exactly how I went broke and ended up in bankruptcy court myself. I know what I'm talking about here. And that's what he did. He made millions. He was a millionaire in his early 20s in real estate. He had like $4 million real estate portfolio and $3 million in debt. He was a millionaire. When you subtract assets from liabilities or liabilities from assets, and then he went broke. And then things happened. Something happened in the market. Banks called in the loans, and it was a big house of cards. And he went bankrupt. Yeah, don't ever do that. And there's a lot of people. You just go out there and start looking on YouTube. Don't recommend it. There are a lot of idiots out there that tell you, you don't need any money. You don't need any money to buy real estate. You can buy a house with no money down. No money, you know. You can make all this money. You just buy it, and you get somebody else to pay the mortgage for it, and it's a sweet deal. You don't need any money. Yeah, that's the dumbest idea you could ever do. All right, baby step number 7. This is the fun one. Build wealth and give like no other. So now that you have no debt, a fully funded emergency fund, retirement savings, and a paid for house, now it's time to start building wealth. After years of sacrifice, you can now enjoy some of the fruit of your labor. And most importantly, now is the time to give like no other. If you miss this point, like I said, you've missed it. Remember what Luke 6 and verse 38 says? Luke 6 and verse 38. I don't have very much scripture in here, but I added in a few because I want to give you some food for your soul. Luke 6, 38. Jesus said, "Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with what measure ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again." Give. Proverbs 11 and verse 24 through 25. This is the key to personal fulfillment. This is also the key to financial success. Being generous, giving to others. Proverbs 11, 24 through 25. "There is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. And there is that withholdeth more than his meat, but it tendeth to poverty." The man that scatters actually increases. He doesn't lose, he gains. "The liberal soul shall be made fat." That is the person that's generous, the liberal soul. "And he that watereth shall be watered also himself." That's the whole point of building wealth, it should be, is to be able to give like no other. Because giving is the most fun that you can have with money. I don't know, I guess I've just been thinking about this a lot since I've been preaching on it for 8 months. And I was thinking that if the Lord ever blessed me to be wealthy, and I mean like really wealthy, I'm talking like real money. And I thought, like, what would I do with it, or what would be fun, what would be my goals or whatever. And I honestly thought, you know, having a Bentley, having some big expensive $100,000+ car, a sports car, some big truck or whatever, like, I wouldn't mind having like a nice full size, just a normal SUV like normal people drive. I mean, that would be nice, but having some big expensive car, having some great big palatial estate with some huge acreage and a big beautiful house, and so just not, just doesn't, that's just not, that would not be so thrilling, I don't think. But I thought, you know what I would love to do? Every time I found a GoFundMe for some local tragedy here, and there was $10,000 on that thing, rather than putting $100 on it and thinking to myself, I hope some other people really chip in, I hope this person can get what they need, how awesome would it be to just fund it? 10 grand. Fund it. And every time you find one of those things, assuming it's legit, fund it. When you find a poor person that needs a house, buy him one. When you find a poor person that needs a car, buy him one. I mean, stuff like that. You find about somebody has these huge medical bills, pay them off. Right? I mean, that would be the most fun you could possibly have with money. To have enough money to where it just wouldn't matter. Like, you know, that $10,000 on that GoFundMe is nothing. To have that kind of money, if a person had that kind of money, that would be the true fun to have with it. To be able to bless others with it. All the cars and the houses and all that stuff, that would be empty and vain. It would get old. A month goes by and it's just another house. It's just another car. Those things do not satisfy. There have been studies that found that whatever your happiness level is, and different people have different happiness levels, but whatever your baseline is, when you get more money, you get a temporary happiness, and you come right back down to the baseline. When you have a tragedy in your life, you go way below, and then you come back up to the baseline. You always pretty much come to the baseline of your happiness. So that's what I thought. If the Lord ever blessed me with great wealth, that would be where it would be at. That would be so much fun. All right, anyway, enough dreaming. Ramsey, in Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money, he says, someone who never has fun with money misses the point. Someone who never invests money will never have any. Someone who never gives is a monkey with his hand in a bottle. He used the analogy, the monkey, there's like a little piece of banana or something in the bottle, and the monkey puts his hand down through the bottle and he grabs a hold of the thing, but then he can't pull it out because he's got his fist clenched on it, right? That's what he's talking about. If you never give, if you're clenched, if your hand's clenched on your money and you're never going to give to anybody else, your hand's stuck in the bottle, right? You're a monkey with your hand in the bottle. Do some of each, that is, give, save, and spend. Give, invest, spend. Do some of each, and if you're married, let your spouse have some slack as soon as there is some. And his famous saying, of course, if you will live like no one else, later you can live like no one else. And he often adds, and I would add, later you can live and give like no one else. Now, there's a thing when you're investing, when you're building wealth, called the pinnacle point. And here's how Ramsey describes that. The pinnacle point. He says, in your money, the pinnacle point is the point when your savings and investments, after years and years of dedication and hard work, make more money for you in a year than you make for yourself. It's when your investments produce a higher return than your work. That's the best downhill ride you'll ever have. And then he says in his other book, The Total Money Makeover, that was in his Complete Guide to Money, in The Total Money Makeover, he says, when your money makes more than you do, you are officially wealthy. When you can comfortably live on your investment income, you are financially secure. Money is a hard worker, harder than you. Money never gets sick, never gets pregnant, and is never disabled. Money works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Money gets its job done, and get this, and it asks only for directions and a firm master. Isn't that something? If you have reached the pinnacle point when you can live off, you have reached the pinnacle point when you can live off 8% of your nest egg. Go ahead, multiply your nest egg by 0.08. And if you can live on that number, or that number is more than you make, you are coasting downhill. Congratulations. Your money makes more than you do. By doing this calculation, you will discover how close you are to hitting this major financial security milestone. You will also be able to calculate what your pinnacle point nest egg is, and then, using all your available income, see how many years it will take you to climb that hill. Believe me, everything is downhill after that. Enjoy the ride. So that's the baby steps. Now I've got just a few more things, three, that is, that I want to mention. And the first one is to forget about being normal, okay? Because normal is broke. Forget about being normal. Forget about living like everyone else. Let's turn to Romans 12 and verse 2. This is why I read this verse for the call to worship this morning. Romans 12 and verse 2. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Be not conformed to this world. Don't try to look and act like everybody else, because you'll be broke like everybody else. If you do that, you'll look wealthy like everybody else, and you'll be broke like everybody else. If you don't live like everybody else, if you do things differently, you will actually be wealthy. You may not look as wealthy, but you will be wealthy when the rest of them aren't. Here's what Ramsey said in The Total Money Makeover. You must walk to the beat of a different drummer, the same beat that the wealthy hear. If the beat sounds common or normal, evacuate the dance floor immediately. The goal is not to be normal, because as my radio listeners know by now, normal is broke. And then in his Complete Guide to Money, he said, the bottom line is this. Normal in North America is broke. Normal is using credit cards, taking on a lifetime of car payments, and spending more than you make. Normal is living on a razor's edge, where any unexpected emergency can send you into panic mode. I finally figured out that I don't want to be normal. I want to be weird. And that's where it's at. Of course, none of us want to be normal religiously speaking, right? You wouldn't be in this church if you wanted to be normal religiously speaking. Well, don't be normal economically speaking either. Don't be normal financially speaking. Quit trying to be normal. Quit trying to keep up with the Joneses. Quit trying to impress your broke friends. Now, here's my hope. 10 years ago when I preached a series on money management, it was just a tiny little thing. It was only two parts. I only spent a couple hours, right? When I did that, I ended the series by stating my fears, which were as follows. Now, I want you to understand, this is not what I'm saying now. I'm just reading you what I wrote and said then, okay? This is not what I'm saying now. But here's what I said then. You're not going to listen to a thing I've said. This is my fear. You're going to keep piling on more debt and saving little to nothing. I said, kids, please listen to me and take heed before you embark on a lifelong journey of serfdom and debt slavery. I said, chances are you won't listen to me either. I'm just a lonely preacher fighting against a world of banksters, politicians, media, commercials, teachers, parents, and peers. And then I quoted one of my favorite songs, a song by Johnny Cash called To Beat the Devil. And you can still hear me singing to the people who don't listen. To the things that I am saying, praying someone's going to hear. And I guess I'll die explaining how the things that they complain about are things they could be changing, hoping someone's going to care. I was born a lonely singer, and I'm bound to die the same, but I've got to feed the hunger in my soul. And if I never have a nickel, I won't ever die ashamed, because I don't believe that no one wants to know. I said at that time, if you think I'm being ridiculous, please prove me wrong. I said, come and tell me that you've done, come and tell me the following. That you created a budget and stopped wasting money. That you paid off your credit card. That you paid off your car loan. That you paid cash for a car. That you saved up a 20% down payment on a house. That you paid off your house. That you're debt free. That you saved up a 3-month emergency fund. That you're saving for retirement. That you've set up multiple bank accounts and automatic transfers to save for various things. I said at that time, if the majority of you do that, I will publicly apologize and admit that I was wrong. I said, if you refuse to heed this instruction, don't be surprised if you end up in poverty. Proverbs 13 and verse 18. I'll read that. Proverbs 13 and verse 18. Poverty and shame shall be to him that refuseth instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. So that was my warning back then. Now, not one person told me that they had done any of those things, with the exception of paying off a car loan. But paying off a car loan is involuntary. I mean, if you paid off a car loan on time, that's involuntary. Your choice is either pay it or it gets repoed. Right? So it's not exactly like some great feat that you paid off a car loan on time. If you paid off a car loan early, that's impressive. But paying it off on time, I mean, it's good. You ought to pay your debts. But, it's not exactly something to be, rejoicing about. But that's the only feedback I ever got, says, somebody paid off a car loan. But I'm not going to end the series this time like I did last time, 10 years ago. I'm not going to end it that way at all. I think, and I'm serious, I think that you're going to heed my advice this time. I really do. I think that you're going to create a budget and take control of your money and tell it where to go and not wonder where it went in 10 years from now. I think you're going to do that. I think that you're going to pay off your debts as if your life depends on it, because it does. I think you're going to do that. I think that you're going to save up 3 to 6 months of expenses in an emergency fund so that you will never again have to take out another penny of debt by the grace of God. I think you're going to do that. I think you're going to get busy on it. I think that you're going to save for retirement and not rely on socialist insecurity to take care of you in your last years. I think you're going to do that. I think that you're going to pay off your houses early using a 15-year mortgage. I think that you're going to build wealth and be generous givers. I think that you're going to be a blessing to others, not a burden on them later on in life. I am like Paul, who said in Philemon 1:21, having confidence in thy obedience, I wrote unto thee, knowing that thou wilt do more than I say. Now, please do me a favor. Do me a favor. As you start to take control of your finances and follow this teaching, please give me some feedback. You will make me inestimably happy if you tell me in the future that you have done the following. All of them would be great. Any of them would make me happy. The more you tell me, the more happy I'm going to be. Tell me that you created a budget and stopped wasting money. Tell me that you paid off your credit cards. Tell me that you paid your car loan and will never have one again. That's the thing. I paid my car loan on time. Okay, I'm happy for you, but really it's not a big deal. I don't care about that. All that means is you didn't get it repoed, okay? But tell me that you paid off your car loan and I will never have one again. Tell me that, and I mean, you know me. I'm not an emotional kind of guy. I'm not an excitable kind of guy, but I will leap for joy and make myself look like an idiot if you tell me that I paid off my car loan and I will never have one again. Tell me that you paid cash for a car. That's after you paid off the car loan and never have one again. Tell me you paid cash for a car. Tell me that you saved up 20% down payment for a house. Tell me that you switched from a 30-year mortgage to a 15-year mortgage. Tell me that you paid off your house early. That will be a celebration. That'd be great. We get together, we can burn up that mortgage, you know, have a party. Seriously, have a mortgage burning party. That'd be great fun. Tell me that you're debt-free, 100%. Another party. Tell me that you saved up a six-month emergency fund. Tell me that you're saving 15% of your gross income for retirement. Tell me that you've set up multiple bank accounts and have automatic transfers to save for various things. Tell me those things, any or all of them, and I will be a happy man. But more importantly, who cares about me? Don't do it for me. Do it for God. God's the one that gives you these principles in the scriptures to be out of debt, save money, to, you know, be responsible, be a good steward of what he's given you. Don't do it for me. Do it for him. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family. And I want to end saying that it's never too late to start. If you are old and you're just now deciding to take control of your finances and build wealth, you're probably not going to die a millionaire, right? Because, you know, it just takes time and all that. But you can still do what Proverbs 19:20 says, hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. It doesn't matter if you spent the last 50 or 60 years being a dummy, right? Okay? Today's another day. Start off and do what you can and see how God blesses it. It's never too late to start, Ramsey says. George Burns won his first Oscar at 80. Golda Meir was prime minister of Israel at 71. Michelangelo painted the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel lying on his back on scaffolding at 71. Colonel Sanders never fried any chicken for money until he was 65. And Kentucky Fried Chicken is a household name worldwide. Albert Schweitzer was still performing surgery in Africa at 89. It is never too late to start. The past has passed. Start where you are, because that is your only option. So it's never too late. I don't want you to think, you know what, I've blown it. I'm already middle-aged and I don't have much saved. You got plenty of time. Even if you're old, do what you can. Now, I did mention for the last two Sundays that I have some bonus material that I'm going to share with you. It's going to be after the sermon. I'm not going to put it on this recording. But I want to share with you information about how to teach you to build wealth more quickly than methods that I've talked about already, and I want to share this with you after the sermon. And no, I'm not talking about buying gold or silver or gold stocks, gold mining companies. I'm not talking about crypto. I'm not talking about Bitcoin. I'm not talking about investing in uranium. I'm not talking about investing in AI. I'm not talking about any of that stuff. So I've probably whetted your appetite now. So I now conclude this series. I hope that you take this to heart and put it into practice, and that God blesses you for it. And I thank you for your kind and patient attention.